Welcome to Atomic Moms, a modern parenting podcast about the joys and complexities of caring for our children and ourselves. I'm Ellie Noss, and since 2014, we've been celebrating and commiserating with world-class experts, best-selling authors, and parents around the world. Hi, everyone. My kitchen renovation is done. Actually, there's a problem, and there's going to be another week, but we're going to table that till January. So for the time being, our kitchen renovation is done. We took down some cabinets and we put two windows in because it was really dark in our kitchen. And now we can see into the backyard and it's so beautiful. And the crazy thing is our house is from the 1920s. And apparently at some point there had been two windows looking out to the backyard. So really we're just bringing our home back to her former glory. Last week, we shared our episode. The title was Do Less. I'm not doing less right now, but I have taken a lot of the things that I learned in that conversation, and I'm applying it to my life right now. The number one thing being learning how to ask for help. So your friends might know that you're going through a struggle. I shared on the episode last week that my husband Adam was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis a couple of years ago, after a very weird period of him falling apart, like his body totally fell apart, and we couldn't figure out why, even though I kept saying it's not immune disease. It's not immune disease. Anyway, it's hard for them to be diagnosed, and sometimes people don't listen to me when they should. Anyway, point being, last week I finally shared that that's been going on behind the scenes for a couple of years now. And usually it's under control. On occasion, there is a flare-up. And when it happens to coincide with a toddler who is out of her crib now and the holidays and a bunch of other things happening, it can get overwhelming. So while we tend to share that we're so busy and doing things, and we'll share a little bit of our overwhelm with friends, I, at least personally, have always had a hard time answering the question, how can I help? I just go blank when someone asks that. And so after our episode last week with Kate Northrup about her book, Do Less, I was able to actually text my friends back. So my girlfriend, Roberta, who lives down the street and her daughters go to the same school, she had texted probably because she had listened to the episode. She's like, can I take Sabrina to school this morning? And I was like, yes, please, yes. And a couple of weeks ago, I would have had that knee-jerk reaction of like, nope, I'm just going to muscle through. I'm going to do it all myself. Like, she doesn't need that. She's got a lot of things going on in, you know, in her own world. Like, I don't need to put that on her. But we can ask for simple things, or we can start with baby steps in that way. And so, yes, you can totally take my kid to school. And not only did that save 40 minutes this morning when I have this interview with Catherine, but it also, accepting that support made me feel a little lighter. Like sometimes it's not even about the thing that you're being helped with. It's about knowing that someone sees you and is showing up. And when we can accept that and not feel guilty about it, you know, it can give us a little wind in our sails when we need it. So today I had Catherine McCord walk through my kitchen and it was so crazy. If you follow her on Instagram at Weelicious, you can imagine what a surreal experience that would be. Catherine is a former Victoria's Secret model and founder of the healthy eating destination Weelicious, an organic food delivery service, One Potato, that has amassed a huge following. Her much-anticipated third cookbook, The Smoothie Project, debuting December 17th, 2019. It's already Amazon's number one new release for cooking with kids, I just saw. And it's a smoothie Bible packed with delicious, foolproof recipes. With guidance from top nutritionists, McCord explains how to eat based on your age and details the health benefits of key smoothie ingredients. So this is our final episode of 2019. If you want to give me a holiday gift, please consider writing a review on iTunes. It can be like three sentences. I also get slightly intimidated by how well crafted some of these reviews have been. Then I'm like, I should just copy and paste this and make me my new summary for the podcast. You guys are so kind. But just three sentences are enough. And I really appreciate hearing from you all. It also helps new moms find us because we live in a really dumb world driven by algorithms. If you've waited years, do it, please. It'll take a minute. You all are the reason I do this podcast, and hearing from you is the fuel that keeps it going. There's also a really good chance that you'll see another mom when you're at the airport traveling over the holidays. Tell her about Atomic Moms, or maybe you're going to reconnect with an old friend who now has a baby. You know, just take their phone and subscribe to Atomic Moms on it. And also join us on Instagram. Happy New Year, everyone. I'll be right back with this conversation with Catherine McCord. Hi, Catherine. Welcome to Atomic Moms.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so we were in a security line last year for a charity event, and I said to you, hi, I think I know you. And you were like, Instagram, maybe?
No, like, is that what I said? Is that what I said? That's even like terrible.
No, I think that's probably the version I told myself later that night when I was tossing and turning and was like, oh, why did I make such a fool out of myself? Because, by the way, that does happen often in this town where you think you know somebody and you sort of do through social media. We had Upfronts, which is a big event in New York when they announced the television shows for the season. And so we were there once with my husband's show on NBC Undateable. And we went to a party and I saw a guy. My husband said hi to him because he actually knew him. And I gave him a big hug because I thought we were good friends.
You are good friends. Oh, you are.
Well, I mean, good friends because I had a few drinks. So everyone's a good friend. But I thought I knew him. And I knew him from the movie I had watched on the plane ride.
Of course.
To New York.
That's the hazard of living in Los Angeles, by the way, because you do like, I mean, I've had people hug me and it's not even Weelicious. They think I'm Cameron Diaz. But people come to Los Angeles with this like fascination of like, there must be celebrities everywhere. So anyone that looks like a celebrity, they're like, or it really is at Starbucks. You run into like,
you do.
It is someone that you're watching on TV. Oh gosh.
So, yeah, that's when I first met you and I realized, or I connected probably very quickly, that it was actually from admiring your Instagram, Weelicious. And then one day I was taking my daughter Eliza to school and I was like, who is that beautiful blonde walking her dog out in front of my house? And I was like, oh, Catherine's stalking me.
That's what's happening. See? Reverse. Exactly. And I was like, I was probably a hot mess, like in my sweats. My dog also has like massive anxiety. So I can't even imagine the duo. I was probably like mortified.
No, it was so perfect because it turns out we're neighbors.
Yeah, we literally live 10 minutes. I mean, 10 Walk. Seconds, 10 houses from each other, but yet I was late. That's embarrassing.
No, it was so good. You guys, she was late, like barely, but because I have the podcast studio in the back, I didn't want to miss the doorbell. Oh. So I was sitting out front and it was the perfect opportunity to take a few breaths and get my like right eye to stop twitching because 'tis the season, as you said earlier, it's insane. You got home. Did you say from San Francisco last night at midnight?
I flew to San Francisco at 2 and I landed back at midnight.
For work.
For work.
What made you want to launch a book in December?
Yeah. I mean, that wasn't even for the book. Like, that's even, the book comes out December, 17th, but it's for like New Year, New You, January. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm like, I'm just a glutton for punishment for any and everything in my life, I think.
So in your bio, you mention that the Smoothie Project was inspired by a challenging health situation with your son. Mm-hmm. Can you share a little bit about what that situation was and how you went about problem solving?
Well, so I've had Weelicious for 12 years, and much of it is based on my oldest child, Kenya. Which really the site revolved around, like, how do I make him a great eater from day one? I had gone to culinary school and worked in restaurants and catering companies, and I realized, like, I can cook a 4-star meal. I have no idea what to feed this baby. So it's been like, I was like, what do I feed you? I don't know. So once Kenya became, let's see, he was 8.5 years old and 8.5, 9. Yes. And he was getting headaches and nausea. And this persisted for some time, I mean, months. And he is the two things about Kenya is like he doesn't complain. Like if he has anything going on in his body, he's just not that kid. You know, like some kids are like, I don't want to go to school, so I'm going to say I have a headache. Mm-hmm. Like he's never misses a day of school. So he's having all these like persistent issues. And I was just like consulting doctors and nutritionists and just like really trying to figure out what was going on. He just felt terrible. So I started to like really look also at my place in it. And Kenya became a vegetarian when he was 5 years old by choice. And he is a very hardcore vegetarian. So what evolved over the years, even though he like loves fruits and vegetables and he'll eat just about anything, he's going to ask for, and he was, it got to this place where he was like, can I have waffles? Can I have pancakes? Can I have crepes with cheese or Nutella, you know, whatever is in them? And I realized that morning after morning, I was putting just bread and cheese and sugars, even though like natural sugars, like this was becoming his diet.
This is our diet and we don't even have the virtue of being vegetarian.
Exactly. That was like his, you know, the excuse. Like he's, so what ended up happening was I realized, I read this book by Kelly Dorfman and Cure Your Kids with Food. And I read this just word about smoothies. And the next day I drew this chart with pictures of fruits and vegetables and carbohydrates and proteins. And I laminated it and let him circle. And I said, pick any smoothie concoction you want. And we did this for several weeks. And within the course of those weeks, all of his symptoms went away. His headaches, his nausea, like just not feeling good. And he even started to connect that he was like, wait a minute, if I put this in my body, I feel good. And what it led to, we can get into this, but it was several years of working with different people, realizing it in myself, that if we put fruits and vegetables and proteins in our bodies at the beginning of the day, we're like firing our brains and bodies. You know, I was sending him to school lethargic and putting foods in his body that just weren't going to work for him. It probably don't work for, you know, many people, but we just don't know. And it's just, you know, it's creating new habits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because sometimes we know and we do it anyway. But if we have the tools, maybe I'll be making some other choices in the new year. I'm trying to think of, you know, I got a fancy blender a few years ago. You know, we all try these things for a minute, right? And then I got it stuck in my head that there was too much sugar.
Mm.
And I think a lot of people are concerned about that because I have flashbacks to being 23, going on jogs with my husband, and we'd stop at Jamba Juice afterwards and drink like and just slurp up an extra large, you know, sugar concoction.
Mango, orange, whatever. But you know that Jamba Juice only uses sherbet in their smoothies.
They don't even use fruit.
No.
So I'm going to get out my blender again now that you have this book and tell me what are those like 3 or 4 things that make a good smoothie that is actually healthful and not just sending our children off with a different sort of sugar high.
Yeah. So when it comes to making smoothies, you know, for me, I look at them like juicing versus smoothies. Like smoothies have tons of fiber. Like we put the real, we're not putting juice in them. It's real strawberries or banana or mango. Like you can use anything and always trying to get a vegetable in there. So even frozen cauliflower, which you don't taste and it makes smoothies really, really creamy. And you're adding in like, you know, hemp seeds, chia seeds, bee pollen, which is an immunity booster, great for seasonal allergies, high in protein. So it's all these ingredients that when you mix them up, you're like, what is this? It's like dessert. It's so good. But the only sugars in them are natural sugars.
Mm-hmm. And is there anything about portion control that I should keep in mind?
I mean, if you saw the smoothies like my son, my husband and I have, it's like, it's sort of obscene. So, I mean, I'm a healthful person. Mine are like 16 to 24 ounces. I'm not that, but my kids are 10 ounces. I like know the size, like the ounce. I've measured all the glasses in our house. So I know the portion sizes of all of them. Because also writing the book, I wanted to make sure that I'm giving the right portion size for people. But, you know, if you're eating fruits and vegetables and proteins, you're not going to, You're not going to, like, I don't want to say this because I don't like, I try to like earmuffs about dieting because it's not a diet book, but you're not going to gain weight. You're like, the idea with the book is you're like maintaining or losing, or you're, you know, there's some smoothies that in the book that are more like for, especially for kids, cancer patients, people that need like nutrient dense calories. So I think there's, you know, a difference there.
Mm-hmm. Can we go back to the beginning?
Sorry. Yes. What is the beginning?
What how is far the sorry? Back? What's the sorry?
I was trying to figure out how far back we're going.
Oh, well, we're not going all the way back to supermodel days yet. I want to go back. You just almost spit out your water.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. That's why I'm like, how far back are we going?
I love it. You're tired. I've got you locked in this room. Exactly. With padded walls. Let's go deep. I want to go back to the beginning of Wealicious. And you started it in 2007 when I was doing my research. It's, you know, you talk about how you were doing chat rooms. Like, this is pre-blogging, definitely pre-Instagram.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And now there is this whole wellness movement on top of the whole motherhood game that's just seems to have amplified significantly since I started the podcast in 2014. Amazing. How did you kick it off? But I guess what I really want to know is, how do you combat burnout after doing it for so long? And also, like, how do you stay original when it feels like there are a lot of people now probably attempting to do what you've trailblazed?
That's a lot in one. Let's go back to the first part, probably, which was I started Wealicious more out of necessity than anything. So there weren't a lot of blogs at all. And I started it because I was looking up information for myself as a brand new mother. Like, how do you make kids great eaters from day one? How do you make cooking easy? Baby food recipes, nutrition. Like, I just couldn't find information. There was literally like one or two books. There, you know, the only sites were like Baby Center. There wasn't anything. So I just started, I created a URL. I started my little Nikon camera taking pictures of baby food that one friend had told me like were lovely, but looked more like vomit than anything.
That says more about baby food
than it was my little camera. And really, I just got super engaged with the audience. Like it was chat rooms. There was Facebook. And I would I still do like answer every single question. I was just so fascinated that my struggles were the same as other mothers, and that we all have this universal problem, which is that for the most part, we went to college, we went right into the workforce, and we didn't realize that having a baby, like, that's the greatest dream for so many people. But it also means once you have that baby, you're feeding them 21 meals plus snacks every week. 52 weeks a year for 18 years. So once you start to digest that fact, you're like, I need help. It's so painful. So that really was the beginning of Wealicious. Mm-hmm. I didn't take any ad sales. I did nothing. I didn't make a penny for the first 2 years. I really felt like this was like my service to the world, to, you know, to have this community. And it just grew really, really fast. And I was working like 7 days a week, like insane, and trying to take care of a new baby. And it grew really fast. And I just, as it went from baby food to toddler food to this idea of like, I don't want to be a short order cook. I want one family, one meal, making food simple. So then when you grow, then the next part of the question is really that, how do I keep it original and how do I keep excited? It's like, I live for every minute and every moment of like, what is work? It's become something different, but the audience, the community, and my own family and children are 100% what drives it. Like, there's just new ideas every day because my struggles trying to figure out, like, you know, like, my kids are getting on a plane today. And I'm like, I got to get them food. I want to make sure that it's good. So, like, the ideas are endless because there's just always new problems or new, you know, conundrums that I'm like trying to, you know, combat.
When you just mentioned the one meal for the family, can you talk to us a little bit about the concept of one potato, which cities it's going to be in soon? Because I feel like I was reading that there's a a ramp up.
There's always, there's a lot happening. So One Potato is, what happened there was that I was developing recipes for another meal delivery company. So I was trying a lot of them and I just was like, none of this works for families. Like their meals were like two adults and two kids was, that's the only size. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, I have three kids. So One Potato is, the food is organic. It's, you can have two adults and then one, two, three, four kids. We're in eight states on the West Coast and all the meals are semi-prepared. So it's, the meals take anywhere from like 12 to 30 minutes for the most part. And they're very DIY. So that one family, one meal, it's like my son's a vegetarian. You know, maybe one of us loves one food more than another. So you put everything out. And an example of meals like chicken burrito bowls. So you have like quinoa or rice and chicken and salsa and guacamole and blah, blah, blah. Everyone's like making their own bowl. So it's like unique. Like we don't all eat the same way. We don't all have the same desires. You know, we try very much. Yeah. We try very much. Like in, when I'm cooking, I'm like, look, this is dinner. But I try to give a little bit of flexibility in the meal, you know, depending on, you know, like who's eating.
What do you do with the circle backs? Like, okay, my six-year-old is just really loving the stall tactic of I'm hungry. And I will say, kitchen is closed. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter because she just still wants something else because she didn't eat enough in the moment. Mm-hmm. What do I do? And then I just end up filling them up on warm milk.
Yeah. So this is actually sort of an easy one. It's a two-part question. Especially when kids are younger, on the younger side, like their digestion, they're just still not there. You know, they're trying to figure
Don't
out.
Don't give Sabrina new excuses.
I know, No. I got you on this. I'm giving her an excuse.
I'm but totally this is between us. She doesn't know. She will say that.
She'll be like, my digestion isn't fully developed.
Totally, Mom.
So here's my suggestion. This is what I do with my family. I make it so boring. When kitchen is closed, like you're saying, but they're just like, also, we just got to get to bed. And we have, there are those kids that don't accept like kitchen's closed.
Yeah.
So you make it, it's all about two choices. And I use this in parent, there's the two choice method. I'm sure you know about it, but I use it a lot in food. So fine, I'm going to give you two choices. You can have a banana or you can have a handful of almonds. What's your choice? You make it so boring that the behavior goes away because you're still giving her a choice. You're like, you get bananas or almonds, which one you want? But for her, she's like, that's not what I wanted. But those are the choices. That's what I've got. Those are both good for you. They're, you know, easy to digest, nutritious, blah, blah, blah. So you make it boring.
Okay. I'm going to go buy almonds.
Whatever. I mean,
those are great choices because they're also not, like, she always wants peanut butter and jelly, which is not a great
choice. We're not making anything.
I know. We're not making anything.
And we're not making it. There's nothing.
We're simplifying. Like, our house is falling apart. We got to simplify.
Cheese stick is fine. No yogurt. Yogurt makes a mess. It takes too long to eat.
Yes.
Like nothing
I'm
that
done
makes,
with
I'm not
yogurt.
Cooking.
No.
Yeah,
that's good. You know what and I mean? The way you said it was so direct. And
two choices has been only learned about two choices when my son was like 8, 9. So I have a 4-year-old also, and we've used it all. Oh, it's so good.
Do you say two choices first? I always give two choices, but I feel like I should start saying
choices. I'm going to give you two. Oh, it's with everything. Even this morning, she was getting up. She was like, I don't want to get out of bed. I was like, I'm going to give you two choices. I'm going to go downstairs and finish breakfast, or I'm going to go get your clothes and get you dressed. What's your choice? And she was like, go get my clothes. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
We do it with every move.
I think I also need to channel your energy with this. Because you've got like a real unstoppable energy when you say it. Like, no one's.
Listen, I'm going to give you two choices.
I'm gonna give you two choices.
Very firm in the eyes.
It's so good.
I say it with much love.
Oh, of course. No, this is good. Okay. We do share a habit in the evening where we both listen to meditations with our kids when they fall asleep.
Yeah.
Okay, my thing is sometimes then I fall asleep. So how do you like keep the train moving after you've listened to a meditation for 20 minutes?
Yeah, you can lay me on this hard table and I'll fall asleep.
I've literally, lately it's been, I can watch 5 minutes of the morning show, that show, like the Apple show.
Uh-huh. Alcorn.
5 minutes. Yeah. And it'll be a scene I really want to see, like with Steve Carell. And I'm like, oh, I'm interested in this moment. And I am out.
Out cold. Oh, yeah. My husband, I've watched like 5 minutes of every episode of The Crown. Every night my husband turns it on. I'm like, I don't know what I'm just pretty tired. But
do you do any work after meditation and the kids go to bed? Or are you just over that? Because I used to. With my first kid, I could get back to work. And now it's game over.
Yeah. No, I have to go back to work every night for the most part. But the good part is that, like, my two older kids, I'll sit with them for a few minutes. But now they, like, want it on their own. So that's good. And actually, like, Gemma, I do a little bit. She's the four-year-old with the meditation. But she's like a good, pretty good rule follower with, like, okay, it's time to go to bed. Love you. You know what I mean? Like, she'll just, like, fall asleep on her own.
Wow.
I know.
I'm impressed.
But by the way, we have one that just doesn't go to bed. So I've run the gamut. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I've been, by number three, I was like, oh, we got to go to bed. You got to go to bed. Yeah, you got to go to bed.
Yeah, we're with our two-year-old. She's just transitioned out of her crib.
Aww.
So there's that whole game. Like, now that she doesn't have this beautiful cage, it's like she's really trying to keep, you know, the show running till after 9 o'clock.
Oh, we just pulled Gemma out of her crib 2 weeks ago. She's 4 and 4 months.
You were so lucky.
Her legs were like wrapping over the crib. She's so tall. But I was like, oh, we're not getting rid of the baby cage until.
No. But so, Eliza fell on her head.
Oh,
which is not the first time I've had to share that on the podcast. So she had this huge bruise. And I was like, Sabrina climbed out of the crib once. I was able to convince her to stay in it again until she was at least 3 and a half.
Uh-huh.
But Eliza had the head injury. And I was like, ah.
Yeah,
and
right.
I watched it on the Nest camera. So I was like, since I saw it go down, I can't
forget
do that.
It. You're like, no. So but by the way, we are really late. You're like the perfect time.
So
yeah. It's no. It's better. I think, it doesn't. No. That stuff, I'm like, whenever it's right for your kid.
Speaking of your three kids, you've got a big age gap.
I know.
Between the last two. Is it 7 years?
It's 8 and a half between Kenya and Gemma, and it's 6 and a half between Chloe and Gemma.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. It was not like, that was all my husband. He was like, I want a third. I was like, why? We have a boy and a girl. We are so good. Like, they're 2 years apart. We're out of it. Yeah. And he was like, please. And he begged.
Okay. Did you have a new appreciation for newborn land since you had that long break?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm the person, I love being pregnant. I love giving birth. I like having a third has been the greatest gift of our life. I mean, it's truly magic. And I'm so grateful. I'm the biggest advocate of age gaps because I could never, when I see people that do it like back to back to back, I just bow to you. I think it's amazing. But like my two first being so close together was like challenging for me.
Yeah, I had a good 4 year almost gap.
Oh, yeah.
And it was very helpful that first year, especially because Sabrina wanted to help with Eliza a lot. I mean, from day one, Eliza was her baby. Like, even in my stomach, she was like, you should tell people, this is my baby. I was just a surrogate.
Totally.
Now that Eliza really has her own opinions, just blossoming in this toddlerdom, it's getting more challenging.
Oh, yeah.
It's really challenging.
Oh, yeah. Gemma runs the show.
Does she?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I love that.
But in a very funny way.
What was it like giving birth after 40?
It was, so I go to, I hospital birthed my son and I home birthed Chloe and Gemma. Mm-hmm. So it was the best. It was really the best because I knew, I think, look, the more, if you have more children, you like, the first time it's just horrible. I stressed out for like every day for, you know, 10 months. Mm-hmm. But by the third child, I was, you know, it's more about, I think, like staying connected because you're just so busy. But it was the best.
Talk to me about the choice of going from a hospital birth to a home birth. And did you have a doula at the hospital when you had your hospital birth?
That's a great question. I did have a doula and she saved me because it was not a great experience at the hospital. That's hence why I ended up switching, but I didn't know there was a choice. I mean, that was the craziest thing is that I did have a doula. And I birthed at Cedars, and so I had two midwives that were my nurses.
Oh, I had a midwife that was a nurse. Her name was Dawn. Did you by any chance have Dawn?
I don't.
She looked like she worked on a farm in Iowa.
But isn't it amazing?
And she just like carried me.
Oh,
she was this big mama bear.
Oh,
and
God.
When I saw her walk in and get me out of the tub, I was like, this is the person who's going to carry my ass across the finish line.
It's totally, I mean, that. That is 100%. I mean, God bless my husband, who was like asleep on a stretcher for like when I was being induced. I mean, with my doula, it was like walking. She was the one carrying me. So anyway, but I saw a documentary, The Business of Being Born, when I was 6 months pregnant with Chloe, my middle child. And I was like, oh my God, there's other choices. I mean, I had had friends who home birthed, but I think until someone's like really in your face and something's like, and I went to my doctor, I was like, I think I'm leaving you. I love you and I want to stay in the practice, but I'm going to home birth. He was like, what? He was like, I don't even understand. And we're still friends, which is kind of funny because he always teases me. But yeah, but it was just became this very much more natural for me personally. But I'm so supportive of like any woman's right. choice for what birth style they choose. Same. But yeah, but for me, it worked.
We had, I had a different doula the second time.
Oh, interesting.
But both of my births were at Cedars, unmedicated. And
that's impressive.
They were very different births. And listeners, new listeners, you can hear my birth stories if you go back in the archives.
I'm going to listen.
The second one with Eliza is pretty great because Adam, my husband, secretly recorded parts of it.
Oh, I love that, though. Sweet? No, oh, God, do that. Film your children at all times. Their voices, births, all that. Voices. Oh, we replay them all the time.
Their voices are so good.
It's so funny. Ah,
but yeah, point being, moms out there and mothers to be, you know, there are a lot of options out there. So, and it's never too late to change it up. I mean, you were 6 months down that path when you decided that you needed to try something different.
Yeah, I think that my only thing always is like, go into your first birth knowing before you make a decision, knowing like all the different options. Don't be scared. I think that that's like people will, you know, to scare tactics, just like you're going to feel it. What's right for you?
Mm-hmm. What's right for you?
There's so many birthing centers, home birth, hospital. Yeah. Like and the game has changed so much since I had my first son.
Okay, enough of this deep, serious, soulful stuff. Is Jennifer Garner as nice as she seems?
Exactly. Jennifer Garner is nicer
really?
Than you would imagine. She's like just a lovely, lovely human being.
I just fell in love with her on Instagram because they shared a video of Julie Andrews calling her because Katie Couric did a surprise call.
It's like the most, I mean, but that's like so, I mean.
So she got all sweaty, her like armpits. She's like waving at her armpits. Oh, she doesn't know she's being recorded, but she's got this surprise call from Julie Andrews, her hero, and she's just sweating and freaking out. And it was the cutest.
My favorite was like the 12-part series of it. She's like, my God. It's great, but don't we all do that? Yeah, no, that is the one thing that I've like noticed and seen like living in Los Angeles or whatever. Like, I would say like those people that you're like, oh my God, I wonder what they're really like. Mm-hmm. Most people that I've come in are like really nice, really generous and humorous and, you know, just lovely people.
That's
my experience. I'm sure there is the dark side.
I'm sure. But we're also lucky that we're, and I was going to say we're lucky that we're in the more like mothering centric part of all of this. But with our husbands being in the industry and your husband being, you know, this huge producer, like you would have the opportunity to meet plenty of not nice people. So,
yeah.
So it's nice to hear.
Yeah. I have no bad stories.
You know, we were just talking about Katie Couric. Growing up, I was obsessed with Diane Sawyer. And I saw that you were as well.
Obsessed.
So I'm thinking about 1995. Uh-huh. Would watch Good Morning America every morning with my mother.
Obsessed.
As we get ready to go to school.
Obsessed.
And at that time, you were on the catwalk, the Victoria's Secret inaugural fashion show.
Hilarious. You know, totally normal walking down with like a runway with your underwear. It was very like, I mean, I had never done it. No one had ever really done it.
Do you remember walking up to the plaza to go do it?
I remember a lot of that because I'm actually still good friends with a lot of the girls that I was in the show with. So we will like laugh about it. You know, it was super surreal. Yeah, like Donald Trump was in the front row.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Full on.
I mean, it would be so weird to look into the future.
I know. What? There's a lot. Believe me, I scratch my head at a lot of things that are today that I wasn't, there were surprises. Yeah, that was actually a really cool experience because when I was modeling, there was just so much transition of what was happening. So it was like, I was very young. I was like a baby, like 16, 17, when the supermodels like Christy, Cindy, Naomi, like all these, like they were the queen bees. And I was doing runway shows with them and just being like wide-eyed. And then, you know, the revolution of like Victoria's Secret, you know, it was Sports Illustrated, then Victoria's Secret came on, came out, and it was the catalog, but then, which was like the catalog. It's so funny I even say that, like now, like it was, people just loved it. And then I started doing the runway shows. Like, so I did the first few. And then they started on network television. And I just think the revolution of, you know, and even talking about supermodels into the waifs, like when Kate Moss came out, and there was like that transition. So I think it's just been interesting, like watching how modeling has changed so much. It's a totally different beast in business now.
You know, you just mentioned Kate Moss and that, you know, the whole waif look. And I know that growing up, you've always loved food. Your family loves food. You collected cookbooks as a child. Mm-hmm. What was your relationship with food like when you were a model? And how did that evolve or change when you went to culinary school? Or even if you were always cool with everything, body image-wise, like I'm sure some of your model friends that there could have been some tension there of like, hi, prepared this meal for you, come over for dinner. Like, because that was such an important part, you know, like a dancer.
Yes.
It's very important, like weight would matter in that world.
I think it was very confusing for me at different times because of the fact that like I was like, I loved cooking as a kid. I loved watching my grandmother and like fresh food. And I just loved it. And like collecting cookbooks, and I am genetically, you know, tall and like more slim, but it became confusing to me because I was younger, living in a model's apartment for many years. With model's apartment. Now it all just, I mean, what the dialogue that's natural to me must sound like just like space
this
age.
This is like candy for me.
It's so funny.
I feel like I am reading Elle magazine right now, like in front of me. Like, so good. Okay.
It was so funny, but I was very young. So I started modeling when I was 13. So I was like 14, 15, 16, 17, living in model's apartments with these girls that were much older than me. And had bigger challenges with their weight. So I've lived with like anorexic, bulimic, like, but I don't think I like understood it all. And I didn't understand, like, so now, I mean, even today, like I enjoy talking to girls, and really the Smoothie Project has been such a gift for mothers that email me about their teen daughters mm-hmm. and their weight and like they won't eat. And, you know, so I do think it's changed now, thank goodness. But at that time, it was very confusing to me because it was just like so much of it was about control, like girls controlling their bodies. Yeah. And then there was, you know, modeling agencies and designers who were like, you need to lose weight. There was no, like today, like the movements, like no one would ever say that. You'd get sued. But back then.
No, but there's stories just from a few years ago in this town. You know, with TV shows and stuff, a lot of times,
Me too,
a lot of people
everything.
Are getting, we're getting, you know, we're going to get you a trainer and you need to lose this amount of weight for the pilot.
Totally.
Like there's so many stories.
I mean,
like that,
really,
yes,
like up
me
to
too,
whatever,
hopefully.
Exactly what you said, like up to like what, 4 years ago, maybe?
Maybe.
Maybe
they're probably
3 years
still trying
ago,
to encourage.
I'm sure. But at least the time that I was living in, you know, it was much
that was
more.
So intense.
Yeah. So I never had that, but it circled around me deeply. Like watching it was, like I said, it was just very confusing. So my fascination, and I really feel like even going to culinary school was like my outlet into like, oh, thank God, like going back and just being around women who like loved food and people that loved food and like used it as a celebration more than a control mechanism. Mm-hmm.
It seems like from what I was reading that your parents really did help you have a clear head going into this, because the idea of my child at 13 being in like a model's house or whatever. Oh. I don't even know what you call it, model home. Like that's a
model's apartment.
A model's apartment, excuse me. A flat, wherever, a flat. Whatever exactly. European city exactly. you were in. For it seems that there would be a million skills that you have learned from that part of your life that you can apply as an entrepreneur now. But the tricky thing would be getting you to this healthy place to be able to use those skills in this new way. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's probably a lot of girls, well, way to go dark, Ellie. It's just the holiday season. But there's probably a lot of girls that don't get that second act because yeah, a lot was probably thrown at you.
Oh,
so how did your parents help guide you?
I mean, I am so grateful for my parents in this way. And I mean, my mother still tortures herself. She's like, why did I let you do that? What was I thinking? And I really did convince my parents at I was very young.
You're convincing.
I was convincing. You're like, I was like, I'm out of here. I got this.
You're
I'm
like,
good.
Two choices.
Yeah, two choices. You let me go or I leave on my own. Goodbye. But no, I was just like, I was very headstrong. Very confident in my choices. But I will be completely honest. Like, I was out. I was living in a model's apartment in Paris when I was 15. I got there. These girls were so bananas. I went to the American church and found myself my own flat and ended up living by myself with a born again Christian. That's a whole other story, but it was so wacky. But I was great until I hit 18. Mm-hmm. So it's another very long story, but I hit my career really went for it. I mean, I was like on the cover of magazines and Calvin Klein and like all these incredible things were happening. And when I was like 18, I had a borderline like nervous breakdown because I was traveling every 2 days, different country, different, you know, states. Mm-hmm. And at that point, my mother came with me for a few months because it was just like too much. I had hit this breaking point where I was fine and I was confident until I was just like, you know, I give models amazing credit because you're talking young girls from who knows if they didn't have parents like I had, like that amazing support. And you're working just endless hours. And like you said, for some girls, weight can be like, so maybe you're not eating. I don't, you know, for everyone, it's different. But I was just like, so my parents didn't, my mom came with me and but like, my dad's whole thing was like, if you save every penny that you make, then you can go do whatever you want with your life. And that's what like drove me because I realized, you know, there were girls that were just like buying Prada and Gucci and, you know, like doing all kinds of things. And I was just like, it was a business for me. I saved everything. I treated it like a business.
Future founder.
Yeah. Future founder. Exactly.
So good.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing all of this.
Thank you.
Do you have any New Year's resolutions?
I mean, I just really want to get back to exercising. Mm-hmm. I was like an exercise like lover for so many years. And like then I just had kids and work and I'd rather spend my free time with my kids than I would like at a gym or something. Mm-hmm. So
just keep walking your dog out in front of my house.
He'll be happy.
Okay, everybody. Add the Smoothie Project to your Christmas wish list. It's the perfect way to kick off January. All of Catherine's social media links are at welicious.com. Thank you so much for coming on, Catherine.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, everybody. Until 2020, trust in your goodness, live out your greatness, rock on, Atomic Moms.